The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. The Cold Slither, you'll be joining us
soon. Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Oh, you insulting tongue, and mock my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I am your host, Tim D-O-double-G.
Yay!
Tonight I'm joined by the man behind the sound effects, at Agent_70 on Twitter.
What's up, what's up?
And also we have at PCN_dirt on Twitter.
There you go.
Yep. Nice.
See, I just use my tablet.
And of nice.
Course, of course, the brightness of the tablet like kills the camera because it's so bright. So now
it's
I'm hiding
in the
cave back here. But
yeah.
Whatever.
You're in a red sun. Looks like
killing all your superpowers.
Yeah. Well, now you know what happened.
And not with us tonight, but also one of our co-hosts at Roddy Cat on Twitter and at Nudes Nerds Need.
Roddy Cat.
And we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Make sure to go to our website, theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. Follow the Twitter account, at theclicknation and at cdcron. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclicknation. Add us to your circles on Google+. You can add the theclicknation page by going to google.com/+theclicknation. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and youtube.com/theclicknation. Make sure to give us the thumbs up. Reshare the episodes. Help us move up the various rankings on iTunes and Stitcher. We are a part of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. Go to their website, coldslitherpodcast.com, which actually still works, and cspn.us, which I don't believe is working right now, last time I checked.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, which is why I'm reading the entire URL now.
Gotcha.
What'd you do, Tim?
Nick Gillette, classic no. And while you're on Cold Slither Podcast Network's website, make sure to buy some nice Comic Book Chronicles merchandise by going to redbubble.com/people/CSPN/shop. Use the hashtags Comic Book Chronicles or CBCron on your favorite social media websites to join the comic book conversation. And like I said, we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. So it's the week before New York Comic Con. A couple of news bits to come out. Our own Agent 70 will be in attendance.
Live and, well, whatever else is in addition to live.
Live and direct? Live and in person? Live and slightly sober?
Yeah, slightly.
So if you're going to be there and you'd like to say hey, make sure to send them an at.
Absolutely. Reach out to me, you know, via Twitter, @agent_70. I'd love to see you. I'd love to hear from you. Direct message if you have the capability. Just, reach out. I'll be happy to say what's up if I can find you in the sea of people.
Well, let's get to some of the news from this week. First up, we got the cinematic news. And see, Matt Damon says he'd play Daredevil if Christopher Nolan directed.
I always thought he'd make a good Daredevil.
He's got the Matt Murdock face to me. But then I've never really held Daredevil to this big standard because I just never really read his books. Nothing against him. I just never got into the various highly acclaimed runs. So whoever played him never really made that much of a difference to me. Mark Millar, I guess, had some microphones put in his face because he says he responds to the Fantastic Four failure and Josh Trank controversy, and he says Civil War, Old Man Logan movies can work without Marvel Fox crossover.
The one thing that I picked up out of his comments about Fantastic Four is that apparently they're still trying to figure out how to do a sequel. Like it's not something they've given up on. Like it's not ruled out. You know, they're still thinking there might be a way that they could pull something out. So we'll see.
What's interesting, and I actually thought about this earlier, and like over the summer when some of the, you know, once the avalanche of bad press for Fantastic Four was coming, and I thought about, you know, Mark Millar is supposed to be like some supervisor. He's like a supervisor or something for the Fox comic book movies. Mm-hmm. But no one ever like brings that up anymore after that initial announcement a couple years ago. I'm sure he probably does something, but he just never, no one brings it up anymore. He just, he gets all his properties turned into movies now. Anthony Mackie doesn't want Falcon or Winter Soldier to become Captain America in the MCU. Chris Evans explains why Captain America is, Chris Evans explains why Captain America is fighting Iron Man in Civil War.
Right, this is a mild spoiler. You know, it basically talks about how this is subtly different from the Civil War event in the Marvel comics. So, I mean, the premise is similar, but you know, there's definitely some more than subtle changes to the storyline.
Well, yeah, because there's no X-Men.
Exactly.
That was kind of a key part of the whole thing.
And nor are there any new Warriors. So.
Right.
TriStar is developing a film adaptation of the graphic novel DMC, created by legendary hip-hop artist Daryl McDaniels of Run DMC and artist Damian Scott. As reported by Trek and Board, McDaniels will produce and Malcolm Gray and Nicole Brown will oversee the project for the studio.
Nice.
Congrats, Run and Damian Scott.
DMC will be at New York Comic Con. I'll make sure to swing by and say what's up.
Robbie Amell, calls for a gritty, character-focused Batman Beyond film. Hey, why not?
Apparently, Salt Lake City Comic-Con has a lot of big stars coming to it. Do you guys see how many stories were dropping from Salt Lake City Comic-Con, of all places?
Mm-mm. Hey, what do you got against Salt Lake City, man?
Well, no, I just thought it was...
Why are you hating on Salt Lake City?
Having never known there to be a big, you know, Comic-Con... At, you know, in Salt Lake City, I was very surprised to see some, you know, big stars like Chris Evans and, you know, Haley Atwell. You know, there's a story about them, you know, about a photo op where some dude proposed to his girlfriend. And I was like, wow, you know, Chris Evans is actually at a Comic-Con and doing photo ops. And where would this be? In Salt Lake City of all places? So
let's see. The Flash cast Candyman star as Iris' mom. That's Iris West. And the actress Vanessa Williams, not the singer.
Yes, not the former Miss America.
Yeah, it's funny because this Vanessa Williams was apparently in...
Melrose Place.
Melrose Place, right. Yep. And so, but everybody keeps listing her as the actress from Candyman. But in Candyman, she's only in there for like a couple minutes. Like, she's not one of the main stars of Candyman. So instead of the TV show that apparently she did a bunch of appearances on, mm-hmm. they keep going back to the Candyman movie because that's like cooler for the comic book crowd. You can't say, oh, that actress from Melrose Place, because then everyone's just going to like shut her out. Like, who cares? I don't want to hear her. Get her gone.
That's what I know her from, though.
Exactly. I haven't seen
Candyman, but I've seen Melrose Place.
Oh, Tim, you're breaking my heart.
Tis true. Isn't the guy that's doing Professor Zoom's voice, was it he in Candyman?
Who's Professor Zoom?
I have to Google it. He's supposedly been in a bunch of stuff. Well, I look for that.
I'm looking on, let's see, Reverse Flashes. Oh, yeah, Tony Todd. Okay, Tony Todd, he was Candyman.
He was, I was going to say he was Candyman.
Yes. So see, they're fans of the movie, apparently.
Well, then you should see it. Don't ever watch number 2, though. Candyman 2 is one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my entire life. Don't ever watch Candyman 2, but watch the first one. It's good.
Never watch the second issue of something.
Right, like Leprechaun. You can watch Leprechaun, but never watch Leprechaun 2, because it's just downhill after the spectacular awesomeness of Leprechaun.
Jennifer Aniston was in the first one.
Yes, I saw it in the theater. I mean, think about that for a minute.
The Flash premiere gets an extra 30 seconds next week. Anna Paquin denies that she's in the Gambit movie as Rogue. And I guess, spoiler, Bill.
All right.
Supposedly a new Firestorm debuts in the Flash Season 2 promo, which was online and then pulled from being online.
I did see that, and it draws upon the new Firestorm draws upon one of the later iterations of Firestorm.
It's funny how some people are like all up in arms about it. I'm like, just because there's a new Firestorm doesn't mean the other one is just completely gone and forgotten about. Like, people are like flipping out, like, if they're gonna use this character, why didn't they start with him in the beginning? It's like, you know, you can flow these people in and out. It's comics. Except on TV. Batman, everyone's been on the edge of their seats waiting to know what Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice was going to be rated.
What are they rating it as?
This is where you do the drum roll.
All right, fine.
PG-13.
I'm not sure how to react to this.
I feel like this is DC WB trying to one-up last week's crucial information of how old Peter Parker was going to be in Captain America: Civil War. As far as the information I couldn't care less about, but that everyone's making, that everyone's plastering, like, you know, breaking news: Peter Parker is going to be 16 years old. Look at when it was. Breaking news: Batman v Superman is going to be
PG-13.
For intense sequences of violence and action throughout, and some sensuality. Of course, it doesn't say, is that Aquaman and a dolphin? Where's the sensuality coming in? We don't know. But it's there.
It's like, it was going to be PG or PG-13. There was only two choices. Same with Peter Parker, he's going to be 15 or 16. Mm-hmm. What's the big deal? Anyway, Danger Mouse races in with new intro and clip. The CBBC has debuted opening for its revival of the 1980s anime series Danger Mouse. Oh, it's going to be on Netflix in the spring. Cool. Let's see. Infinity War would be the end for some of the Avengers team. So there's a big Q&A with Jeremy Latcham and Marvel Studios president Kevin Feige. After the screening of the Blu-ray special effects, yada, yada, yada.
Was that at Salt Lake City Comic Con?
I think this was in L.A. It was in L.A. because that's where everyone could assemble to watch and ask questions. One day I'm going to be one of those people that gets to go travel for that kind of stuff, just talking out loud.
Oh, it was a press screening. I gotcha.
Yeah. Powers cast Michael Madsen as Super Shock.
Okay, sure.
And there's some changes to Marvel Hip Hop covers ordering qualifiers.
Yeah, so they lowered the ordering standards on a bunch of those. So like Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, they dropped the requirements down by 10%. Howling Commandos of S.H.I.E.L.D. are down 15%. Angela Queen of Hell is down 15%. And Extraordinary X-Men is down 20%.
That's the surprising one.
So
I'm not surprised by any of the other ones.
I don't know if that's a sign of how poorly those books were selling, with the hopes that if they lower the standards, you might order a couple more to try to hit that threshold to get the variants, or if those random variants happen to be ones that are more sought after. I don't remember which variants they were on a lot of those, you know, what covers they were being recreated on those.
But I remember the Squirrel Girl is her sitting there, like, looking aimlessly up in the air with, like, a white background and her face.
I was going to say some of them are homaging newer artists, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. So, again, like I said, I don't know if that's because the books are selling poorly, but Extraordinary X-Men being dropped down 20% is, that seems pretty bad. That does not seem like a good thing. The health of the book.
That's on my physical pull list, which I'll bring up later on in the show.
Let's see. I'm trying to see if I can. Oh, it's Extraordinary X-Men is the De La Soul.
That cover I'm actually not crazy about. The book itself I am, but the variant cover I'm just kind of like, eh.
Right, but I think, isn't Extraordinary X-Men, the variant cover is, no, is Extraordinary X-Men is the variant cover by Ed Piskor?
No.
Oh, maybe this article is misinformed.
I know it's the green background.
That's definitely new. Yeah, that's definitely the De La Soul. My mistake. Yeah.
So there it is, straight from Diamond.
Gotcha. You know, I'm on Newsarama, so...
This is from that guy, Sanford Green. You ever heard of him?
Sanford Green!
Friend of the show.
Looking forward to meeting him in person.
Is he going to be up in New York?
I believe so.
Well, then ask him what's up with that cover.
Well, it's a good cover, but I think they're trying to get, interest back into the X-books, to be perfectly honest. So.
Well, yeah, but I mean all of these books, though. Lowering their standards.
If it's a bunch of them, then
we've got four of them at least here, but this does not mean that this is the entire list of all that's going to be changed. Mm-hmm. This is just what we have for now.
Maybe they got a bunch of feedback saying, you know, this is stupid. You're trying to get us to order too many, and they finally was like, okay, we'll ease up a little bit.
What's funny is that these are not the only variants for these issues. Because they're, you know, they're just one of like three or four or five variants for some of these books.
Right. So. Well, yeah. I think Extraordinary X-Men has like six, maybe mm-hmm. seven.
Invisible Iron Man next week probably has got like 10 from the looks of it.
So that might play a role as well.
Too many variants.
And I think a lot of them are starting to get played out. Like, I like the action figure variants, and if I can get my hands on those, I usually grab them just because. But after a while, some of these books I'm looking at, and I'm like, well, I'm not really interested in buying this anyway. Am I going to buy it just to get that variant? No, I'm not that tied into it. You know, it's an option if I was going to buy the book anyway. So I think they're starting to see a lot of those numbers starting to fall off, and they're realizing they got to rein it in a little bit.
Agreed.
Well, they're not going to rein it in until after this round of number ones goes through.
Oh, yeah, but, I mean, all of these number ones, they're going to be doing new number ones all the way through to, like, next May, I think.
Yeah, there's stuff coming out in spring. The stuff they've announced now is for the spring of next year, so you might as well just say near the end of the year, 2016.
Right.
Let's see, in the actual comic book news, Rick Remender's Devolution, finally out in January 26th. Honest. Batman, the animated series vinyls will be available for pre-order this year. Deadlands novel releases from Tori.
Tor. That's an exclamation point.
Because I was going to start reading the summary. Tor Books has announced a new partnership with Pinnacle Entertainment Group and Visionary Comics to publish a series of thrilling novels based on Deadlands, the hugely successful role-playing game and set in the Weird West.
Jonathan Mayberry. There you go.
Oh, is that what Image book does he do? That name sounds familiar.
One of them.
More than likely. Good guess.
I can narrow it down that far.
There are 3.6% more comic book stores in 2015 and 2014. Yay, comic book stores.
Hmm.
Dick Tracy. Dick Tracy, Saga and Sex Criminals win at the 2015 Harvey Awards.
Okay.
Oh, Jonathan Mayberry did a bunch of the Marvel Universe Versus series for Marvel. Marvel Universe versus the Punisher, Marvel Universe versus Wolverine, Marvel Universe versus the Avengers, and he does Rot and Ruin for IDW.
I wonder if Rot and Ruin was one of those comics experience books that IDW picked up.
It's a zombie book with a bunch of, I think it's a bunch of teenagers, if I remember correctly. I remember reading the first couple when they came out. And it's set like years in the future, like not like, hey, this happened last week and now these people are scrambling. It's like a decade or so after the apocalypse has happened and you're watching these people. Unlike The Walking Dead, where they just build farm communities and it's no big deal anymore, this is still a world where you have to worry about zombies.
That's a dig right there.
What?
That's a dig.
I don't know what you're talking about.
All right.
Chip Zdarsky declines Harvey Award for Sex Criminals. His reason for declining the award specifically signed the inherent unfairness of not including writer Matt Fraction, who in Zdarsky's words supplies 90% of the humor.
All right.
Ta-Nehisi Coates wins 2015 MacArthur Genius Award. New Star Wars The Force Awakens books announced. New books are coming to accompany the release of Star Wars The Force Awakens. They include art books, visual dictionary, a sticker book, along with a number of new novels and adventure books. All the local comic shop day 2015 exclusives we can find. What is this? November 28th sees Comics Pro's first local comic shop day in which participating retailers can get access to a bunch of exclusive covers and formats for some of your favorite or soon-to-be favorite comics. Do you have any insight on that, Doug?
Other than the fact that it's not just a simple thing where you say, hey, I want to do that, and you do that, there's apparently some hoops you got to jump through and some forms you got to sign in order to get in on that. So our Damien, the owner of our store, being the way he is, he's looked into it, but how far along that means he's gotten down to being signed up for it, I couldn't tell you.
Who is running that or organizing that? Is that
it's Comics Pro. It's the professional organization representing comic shops.
I see. So,
I mean, there's some. Interesting looking stuff. There is, an all new Wolverine variant from Marvel. There's yet another Back to the Future variant from IDW. Valiant has some stuff. Image has some stuff. And then there's a bunch of, small press guys, Magnetic Press and Oni. And a bunch of places like that are involved. And apparently there's a yet another variant for Dark Knight 3, number one, that's going to be out for that local comic shop day. But, I mean, honestly, until the papers are signed and we get the, you know, packet information from them, I couldn't tell you what the deal is on ordering those. I don't know if it's, you know, percentages based on something, how much you have to pay for them. You know, because a lot of these things, if something's a giveaway, you still have to buy it. You have to pay for it in order to get it, to turn around and give it away. If it's something that you can sell because it's a special variant, sometimes they have, you know, a price. You're supposed to sell it at $9.99, or you're not supposed to sell it for any more than $14.99, or, you know, certain rules like that. But, I mean, as of right now, I couldn't tell you what they are.
It always seems like anytime it comes up to, like, ordering books, and we ask you to explain something as far as how it goes with the shops, the sentence always starts with, well, it's not as simple as you have to jump through this number of hoops to get 7 variant covers.
Yeah.
Valiant launches Faith number 1, the only plus-size female superheroine with her own comic. So she's one. She was a member of the Harbinger teenage group that is one of the more popular series in, at Valiant Comics. Vertigo joins Wattpad. The social reading app is a community where writers can share their stories for free, as well as have notes slash diaries where they can talk about writing in general. Vertigo won't be releasing free stories. Instead, they are using it as a platform to push specific creators, including Lauren Books and Dale Halverson, the team behind the upcoming titles Survivors Club and Down the Road, Gail Simone, and Holly Black. So is it just for creators can only get it, or have to actually click that and read the article?
I think it's like, if I remember correctly, it's a place where writers can go, they can share their stories, people can also comment, and you know they can respond to it. It's supposed to spark conversations between the writers and the readers, and Vertigo is actually like branding a certain part of it, where they can take their writers and say, here's a spot for you, and they can talk about the books that they're doing for Vertigo, respond directly to people, keep the conversation flowing. But the big thing about this particular app is that it skews very heavy towards female readers, as opposed to, you know, everything else that breaks down equal or male heavy. This is like 85% female, something huge like that. So the idea is that they're trying to reach out to another part of the market, you know, through this app and try to pull them into Vertigo.
So it sounds like a safe space, like it's the new form, so to speak.
It's like NPR in the afternoon, where the conversation just rolls along. Joining us today from Vertigo, Dale Halverson.
Yeah, it sounds like a forum, but in a more controlled environment.
Yeah, probably.
I'll check it out if I remember.
Well, you know, you do skew heavily female, I've been told.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome, I think. All right, what's up?
Captain Marvel redesign comes to Marvel Heroes 2015. I'm going to have to go back and read this Bleeding Cool article, because I saw a bunch of rabble about it earlier in the week about, is there a crackdown coming on unlicensed Marvel and Star Wars prints at New York Comic Con?
I mean, this is not the first time we've talked about this. I think this issue came up last year, because if we go into the archives, I'm pretty sure we talked about this particular issue before.
When I say unlicensed prints, I mean just like indie creators that like draw sketches of Batman and try to sell them?
Correct. Correct. I mean, if someone commissions a sketch, that's fine. But if they're going to mass produce prints to try to sell at the con, yeah, that is copyright infringement. What's funny is what I didn't realize and what I've come to learn about in reading this article is that many of the Marvel artists that sell prints of their Marvel work probably pay a license fee to Marvel. Take, for example, this Jim Chung print from Infinity. Mm-hmm. Pretty certain that he licensed this particular image, even though, you know, it's of his own work. He licensed this particular the character. He licensed this image because it contains Marvel characters. So he probably paid some form of fee to Marvel to be able to print this as a to make this as a print.
I want that image now. If I was in my bedroom, I'd reach up on my wall and pull down my Jim Chung Avengers Children Crusade.
Sure.
Well, and also one of the things that it says is that this is not necessarily Marvel making this push as much as people who are actually licensing
right
the characters and licensing the artwork are upset that there isn't more being done about it. So it's Marvel saying that, hey, maybe we need to do something a little bit more about this because these people are upset about it. And technically, I guess when you become a vendor of the show, you agree not to sell any unlicensed merchandise. So like what you were saying earlier, if someone is doing a commission sketch, if you're doing a sketch mm-hmm. or you make a painting and you're selling that, that is one thing that you have made. It's a standalone work of art. Once you put that on an assembly line and do a production run, and you've got 500 of them or whatever that you're selling, mm-hmm. now you're making a mass-produced, commercially available item as opposed to a standalone one-of-a-kind work of art. And that's where they're starting to draw that line.
And I guess that goes along with, I'm not sure if Roddy Cat has it on the spreadsheet or not, but I know there was talk about should artists charge or creators charge a signing fee or not, just to sign like books and whatnot.
Well, just very quickly on that, I didn't have a chance to read that, although I did see that bit of, I guess we could just call it rabble, come across my screen over the last 2 weeks. My experience with artists or just talent charging fees for autographs is that it generally comes down to just trying to limit how much people are going to put in front, you know, of that particular person, so that everyone has a chance to get stuff signed. Yes, part of it is, you know, making either a little bit of scratch or maybe asking for a donation, you know, for the Hero Initiative or something along those lines. Like the CBLDF, you know, you put like a little jar for these nonprofits, and that's a way to raise money for them, as well as kind of limiting, you know, people bringing up an entire run of Uncanny X-Men to Chris Claremont. That's the example that comes to mind readily, because back in the day, people we used to bring like 50, 100 issue chunks of their runs. I'm not kidding. You know, Dirt, you
know
what I'm talking
about. Yeah.
They would bring up like short boxes full of, you know, entire like chunks of a creator's run, and just stand online and get all of that signed. And people who had maybe 3, 4, maybe even 10 books, you know, at the most, because that's what they were carrying, if, you know, feel like you know, someone's really taking advantage of the system. So to combat that, some people charge money. You know, I don't know what that, you know, I don't know what that is, you know, that I'm sure because of how expensive things are now, I think there's a different reason to charge.
Well, you know, I can remember when I first started going to conventions in the early 90s, I used to take a sketchbook, and I used to just walk up and hand it to it and say, hey, can I get your autograph in my sketchbook? Mm-hmm. And a lot of guys would draw a little sketch.
Sure.
And even guys like Mickey Spillane at the time was doing Techno Comics, and he was bringing mm-hmm. his Mike Danger character. So, I mean, he was like this, I don't know, 70-year-old man
yep.
Who's a writer, but I asked him if I could, you know, get his autograph in my sketchbook. So he wrote his name, he's, you know, autographed the book and then drew a word balloon around it and then said, hey, go give it to that artist over there and he'll draw a guy. So then I walked over to the guy who was working on the book and he drew the character in there with the word mm-hmm. balloon coming out with, you know, Mickey Spillane's autograph. And a lot of guys would do that. You would just, hey, can I get an autograph? And they would just flip to a fresh page and draw you a sketch on the page. And it was no big deal, but a lot of people started taking advantage of that. And so now, you know, it's commissioned sketches. Every sketch is, you're paying $5, $20, $200, depending on how much detail you want.
Exactly.
There are no more free sketches at cons, and that used to be the thing when I was a kid.
Definitely, definitely. And I think that also these tables have gotten so much more expensive yeah. that, you know, especially at the big shows, that, you know, free sketching is just, you know, it's a losing proposition for many of these artists. I can tell you that one artist that still does free sketches to this day, it's probably for the reason that he does very little line work in them. They're very basic shapes. So it's Walt Simonson. He doesn't charge, but they're very simple, basic, you know, sketches.
Yeah,
but
he can do a portrait of a character in like 2 minutes.
In his style, and it's, you know, and it's great and it's free. Believe me.
But he's also one of the old school guys.
Right.
He's one of those guys who's, you know, been doing the cons since the 70s. You know?
Right. He's not necessarily paying for his table. You know
he's not. Yeah. You know, a lot of those guys who have the ultra sharp blue line pencils that they're laying down, you know, the roughs, and then they're going over it with the fine line and doing that, and then going on top of it with inks. You know, they don't just grab a brush marker and go psh, 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 and there you've got a sketch. You know, they actually are spending too much time on it to be able to do that for free. But mm-hmm. yeah, it happens.
All righty.
Create 12 different action-packed based or Action Pack comic books with the superhero comic kit. Someone pronounce this next thing for me. Deus.
Where am I looking?
Deus Ex.
Deus Ex comes to comics with Titan.
Based on the video game.
Titan Comics.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay. Yeah, like Deus Ex Machina.
Dark Horse comes to Hoopla with more than 900 different titles. IDW's exclusive and comic books for New York Comic Con include Jim, Danger Girl, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and G.I. Joe. Dark Horse has some New York exclusives. Descenders New Direction begins this November. Yay! Lion Forge heads to year 2 at New York Comic Con. I didn't know it hadn't been around that long.
Yeah, I remember it being at St. Louis, Wizard World St. Louis last year for the first Wizard World in St. Louis. That was part of their big launch. Before they actually had the books out, they just had the computer kiosks set up that you could take a look at them because they were all digital. There were no print copies at the time. But now they did, you know, Airwolf, Miami Vice,
right.
Knight Rider, you know, a lot of those older properties. And it says here that one of the ones that they've signed on now is Mad Balls.
Oh, no!
Comic.
You gotta be kidding me.
Nope.
Oh, you know that Lion Forge is on NetGalley.
Oh, are they?
Yep.
Well, then sign up right now. Tell them you want Mad Balls.
I actually, there's a Andre the Giant book on there. It's on there, but then they have it where you have to, it's not available for requests, but you can send like them a note, like click a button and say, hey, I'd like to have this available to read. It's like, why even be on there if the book isn't actually available to be requested? But either way, the company is on there.
Which book is that?
It's Giappo, somebody is the writer. And
I wonder if that's the one I just ordered, because I just ordered it.
The Red Hood and Arsenal artist is the artist on it, Dennis Midry.
Andre the Giant, Closer to Heaven. Yeah, I just ordered that, actually. Oh. Brandon Easton and Dennis Midry. Yep.
Okay, Brandon Easton.
Yep, that's the one I just ordered. So, all right, cool.
Marvel's editor-in-chief, Axel Alonso, teases next event, calling it a story everyone will relate to.
Yeah, this was in a podcast, actually. The Andy Greenwald podcast on Grantland, you know, the site that was formerly, that was founded by Bill Simmons long before he got fired by ESPN. But it's associated with ESPN, and it's actually a really interesting podcast. I recommend that anyone listening or watching our show tune over and look for the Andy Greenwald podcast and look for this episode with Axel Alonso, because they definitely talk about a lot of cool and different things that are related to all new and all different Marvel.
I will be tuning into that then. Hopefully I'll make a mental note to do it. I was kind of complaining to myself earlier in the week how I'm kind of behind on my podcast, just like I am in comics. And there's going to be a young Luke Skywalker comic from Korea. Young Luke Skywalker comic from Korea debuts in English online webtoon. It actually makes sense, but trying to read it sounds weird. So yeah, there's a new young Skywalker comic. See, in the variant corner, Harley's Little Black Book will be December's DC Comics variant cover theme, because it seems like Harley's always the theme every, 3 months?
Oh, that's right. These are the ones that are all bagged. I forgot about that. So they're going to be coming in black poly bags, and there's 3 different versions of the cover in each bag.
Oh, so you don't know which one you're getting?
One of them is, I think, actually a hand-drawn sketch. One is a black and white variant. And I forget what the other one is. Maybe one is done in ink and one is done in pencil. I forget, but they're going to be mixed in the black bags, and you don't know which one you get until you open the bag, basically. And so the way it was actually written to retailers for us when we're ordering them is it says your customers won't know which cover they're getting unless you open the bags for them in advance. So they're kind of laying it out there like they're okay if you want to rip them all open, separate them out by what they are and sell them, you know, as those types of covers, as opposed to this random lottery of random covers. I don't know. It was just the weirdest thing, the way they worded it on there. That they're saying, we're okay if you want to rip them all open and you know, save certain ones for markup, is what it sounded like.
Jay Scott Campbell creates his own exclusive covers for Spider-Man, Spider-Gwen, and Back to the Future and sells them online, signed or unsigned. I'm assuming he got permission for this too.
Probably.
Yeah, this is because these are all from those programs where people can get exclusive covers made, and usually it's done by a store or a website. You know, like Hastings will get their own, variant. Dynamic Forces will get their own variant. J. Scott Campbell, apparently, for his, he started his website, and for his website, he's getting exclusive covers with his website logo on it, just like a store would, but instead, he's doing the artwork himself. So you go to his website to buy his variant of that comic book, and if you want to pay extra, he'll sign it when he mails it to you. Kind of an interesting idea to take that exclusive idea and make it, if you're the artist doing the artwork yourself, make your own store and sell your own stuff. It's a good idea.
Yeah. First look at Jim Lee's Dark Knight 3 The Master Race variant cover. Monsalas draws Prince Valiant for Dynamite. Coming on October 28th from Vertigo Comics is the new series Art Ops. Oh, wait. Actually, let me go back and read. Sean Simon and Michael Arid talk art at their new series Art Ops. DC Superhero Girls launches... I guess they launched a website. They have an animated short, and the site is geared towards younger female audience.
Yeah, it's DCSuperheroGirls.com.
Actually, I haven't gone to the website yet, but...
it's like a, you know, it's one of those kids sites. You know, all the characters are done as kid-friendly, you know, versions of them, and they've got, you know, a little animated cartoon. They're going to be doing an online series as a kids web series for girls. Yeah, and they've got games you can play online and wallpapers you can download and stuff, but they're going to start doing exclusive T-shirts and statues and... you know, stuff, dolls of the kid-friendly versions of these characters for people to buy. So that's one thing, since I do have a young daughter, that is something that's definitely on her radar as something she's looking forward to.
And Uncanny X-Men 600 will come out in November, finally.
Finally.
And the ad today is for Skull Candy. Let me tell you about Skull Candy. Skull Candy makes the best headphones, earbuds, and gaming headsets, all with lifetime warranties. Skull Candy produces many types of audio accessories, including headphones, sports earbuds, Xbox gaming headsets, PlayStation gaming headsets, DJ headphones, iPod headphones, and MP3 headphones. And now for listeners of Comic Book Chronicles, Skull Candy offers free standard shipping on your order. To help keep our podcast free, order from Skull Candy by going to cspn.us, that's cspn.us, then clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Skull Candy banner and then shop for high-quality audio accessories with free standard shipping. Skull Candy Audio through cspn.us. Do it today.
Nice.
Comic book reviewing time.
Boo.
Ah, because it's a light week this week. It's like the calm before the storm of next week.
Yeah, well, this is the fifth week of the month, and so fifth week is always just kind of like the leftover remnants of... A lot of times week four and week five get split in order to make that fifth week. So...
What do we want to start with?
Well, there was that that one book, that super huge one that came out this week with that guy who did that thing.
Ah!
It was the one everybody was reading.
Need more hints?
I got nothing.
Let's get Superman 44 out of the way.
And then pretend like it never happened afterwards?
Pretty much.
I'm not sure how to talk about this. Because
did everybody read it?
I did read it.
Okay, I read it, yeah. Tim read it.
I've reviewed it on theclicknation.com and popculturenetwork.com.
Yay!
So this was an issue of Superman taking on villains that, since they know his secret identity now, they said, hey, I want a piece of Superman / Clark Kent. So first he fought... the Royal Flush Gang, then he fought Livewire, then he fought another group of villains, and that was about it.
Like, this is a new version of the Royal Flush Gang. I don't know if we've seen them in the New 52, but they used to look like the guys from the playing cards. I mean, that was
right.
The gimmick, is they look like, and now they look like, I don't know, like weird gang members with spades and hearts painted on them. I don't know, it was just...
I'm not as familiar with the Royal Flush Gang from the comics. My main connection to them comes from the animated series, the various animated series that you see them in, and their various incarnations, and the animated movies. So I agree with you. It was kind of off-putting to see them depicted this way as like kind of just regular-looking people with tattoos.
Well, and that was the thing, is I started reading this, and I go, oh, they kind of look like the Royal Flush Gang. I wonder who these guys are. And then it says that's who they are, and I'm like, no. No.
I think I remember reading in a solicit, you know, promoting the issue that, at least in the solicit, it was like, you know, Royal Flush Gang makes their new 52 debut.
Yeah, really? And they're in there for like four pages, and then they're gone. Never.
And it's lame as hell, too, because...
And apparently one of them was a woman. Go figure.
Well, she had the tube top on. That's how you could tell.
But yeah, once she saw, clearly could see the
tube gender. Yeah.
But, I mean, just visually, I couldn't tell her from her brother.
Because they're both bald with these weird tribal tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because when you first see them, all you see are their heads.
Right. And the coloring. Really, yeah, I was about to say, and the coloring choices for the tube top costume left a lot to be desired. Doesn't show. There's not a lot of contrast.
And there's no pattern or design on it. It's just plain white.
Right. Yeah, I have to tell you that, you know, I'm a fan of J.R. Jr.'s art, John Romita Jr.'s art, but I was not impressed by a lot of what I saw here when it came to this version of the Royal Flush Gang.
You know, generally I like him, and I know a lot of people don't, and I understand that. He's not for everybody, like a Mike Mignola or, you know, somebody who has... A lot of people like Sam Keith, and I can't stand him. You know, it's just people have different...
Right, the ones who are more stylistic than straight superhero anatomy.
But this issue was just bad. Like, I don't know if he didn't have as much time to finish it or what, but it really felt like a lot of these pages he was just scribbling down.
Well, you know what? I disagree with that to a certain extent. I think this issue suffered from what the story is trying to portray. And I think that's where my difficulty with this book lies. Jean Luen Yang's story kind of weaves in, you know, some of the aspects of, you know, what happened to Spider-Man after his unmasking in Civil War. You know, his family and friends, you know, in this case, Clark Kent's family, friends, and coworkers becoming targets of these villains once his alter ego has been outed. And, you know, we bounce from one page to the next of Clark running into these situations where, you know, he's being attacked or his family, friends, or coworkers are being attacked. And I think that, you know, the art basically is just going from one encounter to another. There's not much downtime. And the one bit of downtime there is a really weird exchange between Lois Lane and her father, General Lane. And, you know, it was just one of the stranger things I've read in a while. You know, I'm still not sure how much I should be reading into this particular conversation, this exchange in the book. I'm still not sure how to interpret it. But it didn't look like the art was unfinished, because that's sometimes one of the criticisms, because let's face it, Romita Jr.'s style lends itself to being fast. He's never been an artist that was criticized for not finishing his work on time.
Well, okay, fair enough.
Right? So he's not one of those, right? So he's able to generally, you know, pull together issues on the quick side. And if you flip through this book, you don't necessarily see sloppiness when it comes to unfinished line work. I just don't like the fact I don't like what the story's trying to tell. And I think that's what it suffers from. You know, there's an exchange between Perry White and Clark in this. It seems so unnatural. Seems so contrary to the characters as I knew them that, you know, I was uncomfortable reading it. So I think that's generally what leads, maybe that's what kind of makes us uncomfortable, or what might be making you uncomfortable with the art. I'm uncomfortable with the story. I didn't necessarily see the quality of Romita Jr.'s art as being a problem. I thought that the story he was trying to tell in conjunction with the script was what was really bothering.
I think, for me, it was a lot of the panel breakdowns don't seem to flow like the way they should. Mm. And that's kind of what I put up for the sloppiness of it.
I see.
He's got to fit these things. There's a scene where he's seen all the bad guys in the Daily Planet, and you just have this panel where the five villains are standing there, and they're all kind of crowded off to one side. The tops of their heads are cut off.
Mm-hmm.
Clark is supposed to be there in the smoke, and you just have these lines that are like hair coming out of these horizontal lines that are supposed to be his shirt, and it just looks like, you know, he just ran out of space. Like, he just started drawing it in ink without realizing how much space he'd need for these characters, so by the time he gets over to the right-hand side of the page, he's like, oh yeah, Atomic Skull has to be in here too. I'm just going to draw half his face up in this corner and pretend like that's where he's supposed to be in the panel.
So So just very quickly, I hate to interrupt. I just wanted to, in terms of the layout, try to take note of where you were. I wanted to point out that, you know, I guess it's my continuing criticism of the story. It may be Yang's way of, like, he kind of tightly plots the way the book might look. This might be a situation where Yang really hasn't given Romita Jr. like a couple of splash pages. If you look, I was just flipping through it. There are no splash pages. There's a lot of story that Yang is trying to get told in this. So I think maybe that's where it kind of suffers. Go ahead.
Yeah, that may also be playing into the fact that this is supposed to wrap up the storyline. Mm. This is supposed to be the final chapter of this arc.
Okay.
I mean, that's definitely feels that way in the story, where you get about halfway through the book and suddenly he's cramming in all these different scenes,
right,
all these different interactions, just because it's got to get in there,
right,
before the book gets done. And that was another problem I had with this story. It didn't flow well. The villains pop out of nowhere. I can understand the Royal Flush Gang. You got background on them. Like, here we're coming, we're going to hunt them down, this is why we're going to find them, this is how we're going to find them, this is where he's going to be, et cetera, et cetera. But then you get to these villains in the Daily Planet, and what's the connection? What's the connection between Livewire and Killer Croc? Why is Atomic Skull in there with Shockwave? Like, mm-hmm. It's just this random group. Like, these guys were sitting around in the villains' bar, and they all got drunk one night, and they're like, now let's go get them. And they just, you know, left in this random hodgepodge group. It made no sense,
mm-hmm.
you know, really for them to be there. It's not like they're an affiliated villain team or they have some grand history.
Agreed.
And you also had characters like, for instance, in Tim's review of the book, he makes mention of a character that he thought is misnamed because he thinks that Killer Croc is accidentally being called Killer Frost, not realizing that Killer Frost is actually there because she only appears in two panels. And in one panel she's standing up, and in one panel she's crumbled on the floor. Otherwise you don't see her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was just like a waste. Why is she even there? Like, why is that? Why was she thrown into the story?
I think she had two word balloons the entire two pages she shows up in.
Yeah.
And the second one is just her screaming.
You're getting knocked out, exactly.
And then when you get to the end of the book, when Superman makes this threat to everyone, don't come after my friends, don't come after my family, I will find you, I will hunt you. I'm like, what the heck is this?
Yeah. Yeah,
this does not fit anything in the mythos. It does not fit anything in the character. I understand the idea that Lois is standing there saying, an eye for an eye isn't how Superman's supposed to work. And Superman's saying, well, maybe not before, you know, that things have changed. You know, this is a grand change. But you don't hear any conversation about this change. He doesn't talk about why things need to change. He doesn't work through it. It's just, on the one hand, he has this fight with Perry White. And then the next page, he's standing on this rooftop filming this threat to be broadcast out to everybody, which is another thing. How does Jimmy Olsen tap into all the TVs in the world to send out this signal? He is not the Independence Day aliens taking over the broadcast networks on planet Earth. So, you know, this was just so bad on so many levels.
I was uncomfortable reading the whole book. It says a lot.
I read it once, and I got to the end, and I thought, I didn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave it a 75 out of 100. And then Tim wrote his review, and I read his review, and I'm like, I agree with everything in there. And the more I think about this, the less I liked it.
Yeah.
You know, just yeah,
I think it's
it
like
one,
the first, since I've been doing my little star rating system, I think this is the first 2 I've given.
Yeah,
you gave it a 2 out of 10 or 2 out of 5?
5.
Okay.
It's just not good. It's
yeah,
just,
I did not enjoy.
Yeah, I didn't like the story. Yeah. Dave was saying, or Agent 70 was saying, he's not a fan of more of the story. It's like the whole thing for me, the art. And Romita, I remember as a kid, I wasn't crazy about his art, but then as I got older, I started appreciating it, saying, you know, it's not that bad, but it's just not good here. And it could be a combo of his pencils and the colors.
Yeah, I was going to say the coloring was also another issue on here, because when mm-hmm. Killer Frost goes down, she's not a blue frost pile on the ground. She's like orange and red and yellow. It's like those are not her colors. Like, what the heck happened there?
Yeah, then we all give right. this too much time.
So
yeah, seriously, we're hacking this thing apart.
So I'll just end by saying that this storyline has been a complete letdown.
Yes.
For this being the bridge of from the old Superman to the new Superman, for bringing in this writer, I guess he's a novelist, writes sci-fi novels or something. They brought him in to write comics. This was his big splash into the world of comic books. This has not been good. It has not been consistent. And this is the storyline where it's like, I read it because it's Superman and I read Superman. I will probably never read it again. I will never think of it again, except in times when I get angry over reading stuff that's not good.
Stick to Action Comics and Batman, Superman.
Yeah.
Superman, Batman. Yeah.
Those have been much better.
Yeah.
Superman, Wonder Woman, I'm not even crazy about that too much.
It's still better than this.
Yeah. The two issues I've read, not much has really happened in that, though. So, let's see.
Well, then let's go to the other DC book. Well, actually, let's save that one for later. Let's save that one for the end. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to get a Marvel book out the way. Shield number 10. I see Agent 70 read it.
This book was awesome.
It was fun.
I was surprised at how much I enjoyed this, you know? So basically, the story is, you know, due to some of the events, happening in the Marvel Universe that involved, Spider-Verse, right? And am I getting the name of the event wrong?
What was the event?
What was the Spidey event?
What happened in the event?
Spider-Verse.
Yeah, it was Spider-Verse, right?
Yeah.
I couldn't remember. So due to the events of Spider-Verse, apparently there's some interdimensional shenanigans going on. So Fitz from Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. makes an appearance here, and basically they have to recruit the help of one Howard the Duck to try to, you know, set things straight. And, you know, let me tell you, I can't say I've read that many Howard the Duck stories. I did read the first, I think, maybe two issues of the new Howard the Duck series before Secret Wars ended that. This felt so much like it could have just been an issue of the regular Howard the Duck series, because it was so firmly a Howard the Duck story with just a hint of S.H.I.E.L.D. in it, that it definitely felt like it was a regular issue, or maybe even a crossover issue with the Howard the Duck regular series. So, you know, this definitely serves as, you know, a one-off for fans who may be looking for more adventures of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and seeing, hey, you know what, who is this Howard the Duck character that's making, you know, that's kind of funny and lighthearted. You know, it might be a primer for the character maybe having more of a presence either through the movies or through television or through the new series, you know, that's coming in all new, all different. It's kind of a funny place to drop this story.
Mark Waid writes a very good Howard.
Yeah. I enjoyed this as a straight Howard the Duck story. You know, yeah. It just felt weird that it was smack in the middle of a S.H.I.E.L.D. book.
And Evan Doc Shanner on art is very good.
Absolutely. It was well laid out. The art made sense. There's a lot of cool jokes in the art.
Yeah, I like the, just for one gag, Howard starts listing how many, like, heroes have, you know, the heroes that
have died and come back.
Yeah, died and come back to life. He's like, it's a short list. Mm-hmm. And then he start for three panels, he's naming characters that have died and come back, basically proving it's a laundry list of people.
Mm-hmm.
But so, yeah, overall, good issue.
Right. It was just an enjoyable thing. But like I said, it didn't feel like a S.H.I.E.L.D. book. It definitely felt a lot like an issue of the Howard the Duck series.
Oh, shout out to Matt Wayne, 97, watching the show.
All right. Well, then, did you read the other S.H.I.E.L.D. book?
I did not.
I actually read it because it was a light week on comics. And even though I'm not familiar with the TV show, I've been reading these 50 Years of S.H.I.E.L.D. specials. And it was fine, but it didn't feel like anything special.
It's not. I was about to say, it's not essential reading.
No. I mean, if you like Agent May and you're desperate to read a story about her, then here you go. But this is not anything that really plays into, like, the history of S.H.I.E.L.D. or the inner workings of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's just her on a training mission with some rookies, and things go awry, and they have to fix everything at the end, and Coulson makes an appearance, and then the book is over.
Right.
I mean, it's just a paint-by-numbers... I was just saying, it's a paint-by-numbers story just to get Agent May some screen time, so to speak.
Right. That's the part I enjoyed. What I didn't enjoy was that the book itself dwelt upon the recruits to a large extent. And what we get in terms of Agent May's history and her and how she's gotten to this point in her character, how we get that comes in flashback panels, and it's meant to kind of parallel the dangers that May and these recruits find themselves in. And, you know, we're meant to see how this runs parallel to, you know, some of the things that help shape her as a character. And I guess to that extent, it works. It just felt like we were dwelling a lot on these recruits and we weren't seeing much, or we could have seen a lot more of Agent May, but I guess that's just part of the sales pitch. They want to give you just enough so that you come back for more.
The other problem I had was that they're on this training mission, these cybernetic dogs appear, they attack everybody, they have to figure out how to fight them, they destroy them, they take them back to S.H.I.E.L.D. base, Coulson shows up, oh, we're going to identify the parts, we're going to figure out where these things came from, it's just a matter of time, and then the story's over. Like, you don't learn who was behind them, you don't learn where they came from, it doesn't lead to anything, it's just another random mission, another day in the life. Mm-hmm. You may not be the team that follows up on this, but you were a part of it, and I guess, you know, at the end of the day, I don't hate myself for reading it, but it was just nothing special that I'm ever going to, you know, look back on.
Yeah, like I said, not required reading.
Which reminds me of the next book I read, just because it was a slow week. I read Aquaman 44.
I tried. Well, I started with the first couple pages, and I stopped. I said, I can't do this.
I read the whole thing.
Wow.
And I can tell you that this entire book could have easily been condensed down to 3 pages, and instead they made a whole book out of it. And I don't know if I want to give away the whole thing or not, but Aquaman goes to see Mera, tries to patch things up. Things go awry. He teleports out of there, and he ends up apparently on some alien planet, and that's where the issue ends. Huh. And it's the most random thing ever. The entire conversation he has with Mera apparently was for nothing. Mm-hmm. Didn't go anywhere. It's not going to add anything because of what happens later in the book. But they were nice enough to put in a 2-page spread of Aquaman and Mera getting it on. So if you want a 2-page spread of what underwater Atlantean busy business looks like, then Aquaman 44 is the book for you. Otherwise, you could probably skip it for the rest of your life. And
oh, I didn't get that far.
Oh, see? You should have stuck with it, I guess.
Not really. It's one of the 6 or 5 books that DC sent me this week, so I'll be trying to get through it, write a review of it. I did read the last issue. I keep thinking about it. I haven't read the previous Batman Superman where Aquaman, I think, made an appearance.
Yes.
Yeah. That I haven't read yet.
Yeah. So you could, I don't know what purpose this really serves. Like I said, it easily could have been the span of 3 pages. He could show up, talk to her, they have the twist reveal, he zaps himself away, and he ends up on this alien planet that sets up for the next issue. But, I mean, it doesn't make any sense at all.
Tie into any of the events in the previous issue?
I haven't read it in like 6 months.
Okay.
This was just one of those things where it was a slow week, and I thought I would just try it, see if it was something I wanted to start reading again. And
same.
Last issue leads in, I believe, because I haven't read, like I said, I haven't read this issue, but I read someone's review of it on another site, and
the last issue just him fighting with Mera over?
No.
Oh, okay.
But last page of last issue shows the swerve that is involved, I believe.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So people who are reading this book know what's happening?
Yes.
Oh, that makes it even dumber. I mean, that's even worse.
Yeah, because I guess it would make no sense if, I guess they could have done the reveal here, right? But, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. All right, well, now I like it even less knowing that. Because that was the only interesting thing about the story is that reveal of what's happening with Mera. And if that's something that they gave away last issue, then there's literally nothing in this book.
God, we're full of good cheer today.
How was Captain America White number 2? Because I'll quickly say I started reading 1 over the weekend. Mm-hmm. And I was just kind of like, after like halfway through, I just started like kind of flipping through it. I mean, it was fine, but there's nothing like I need to read this pivotal story.
Well, I love the Loeb and Sale, these limited series, you know, with these color themes. So, you know, I think I have a copy of all of them up to this point. So this issue is. You know, it picks up from where we left off at the end of last issue with a mission with the Howling Commandos and Captain America and Bucky. A mission basically goes awry, and without spoiling too much, I'm going to ring the spoiler bell, but not spoil too much of this. I liked how, I liked the way the story progressed. I liked that a lot of this stuff is one of the running themes in these color theme books is that a lot of it is reminiscing, and the mood of the story is kind of intertwined with the color. So I'm not sure yet how white plays into the themes of this book, but I definitely see that this is Cap kind of reminiscing about Bucky. This is sort of pre-Winter Soldier, and there's a few things that happen in this book that they're just really cool character interactions between the Howling Commandos and Cap and Bucky. One thing that does happen in this, though, that kind of took this book out of Click of the Week consideration was that there is very much so. It's funny that you were struggling with the pronunciation of this, Tim. A Deus Ex Machina mechanism in this book that literally comes in, and something happens in the book, and you're like, oh, okay, I wonder how they're going to resolve this, and it gets resolved in a page because somebody decides to appear and then quickly disappear. So, I just got very frustrated because it took me right out of the flow of the story, and then I was asked to, on the next page, kind of jump back into the story with no real, there's no consequence to the appearance of this Deus Ex Machina. So, I enjoyed it overall. I definitely can't give it a click of the week because of how jarring this particular character's appearance is. But ultimately, it's still a good read. I enjoy this these theme books, and Loeb and Sale have this particular way of telling a story down pat. Sale's panel work here is awesome.
Is there any bonus material at the end of this one?
Hold on. Let me pull out my hard copy.
Because I know the first one had that Captain America Zero stuff on there, and there were some production sketches and whatever in the back, but it was an extra dollar.
Right. So here's my $3.99. Right. Here's my hard copy, and I don't believe it has any extra stuff at the back. Although, let me tell you, the art in this, in physical form, because I didn't look at it yet. I hadn't opened this yet. In physical form, the art in this is that much more impressive. Mm. So, Dirt, if you have a chance, when you go into the shop, hopefully there's still a copy left, flip through this. I think you'll be much more impressed looking at this in physical form as opposed to, the digital form that you were probably reading your review copy in. It doesn't do it justice.
I remember I quickly flipped through it on Tuesday when I was going through the books, but it was just one of those things where, I don't really feel like reading this right now, and I figured I'd get to it later. So, all right. Let's see, what's some other stuff?
I think both of y'all read the Batman Annual.
Yeah.
How'd you feel about this, Dirt?
I enjoyed it overall.
It was good, and then I got to kind of the swerve or the twist of the misunderstanding, or what they were, I guess, what the point of the story and what the motivation of the villains was
about being against the Wayne.
Exactly, specifically Bruce Wayne.
Right.
So very quickly, this annual. Tells a story that undoes, to a certain extent, one of the things that was that was kind of shocking during the latter stages of the New 52, which is, spoiler alert, the conversion of Wayne Manor into the latest version of Arkham Asylum.
Oh, so it finishes that up, huh?
Yeah, Arkham Manor.
Arkham Manor, yeah, but
it got canceled.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, it replaces Arkham Asylum. So.
The heart of what this story is that we've had for the last, 4 months, whatever, Batman Detective, Superman Batman, we've had a Batman without Bruce Wayne.
Right. We've had Robo Batman and lots of Robo Batman.
Right. And so what we get in this annual is, since we've seen Batman without Bruce Wayne, now we're going to see Bruce Wayne without Batman. And it's been previously revealed that Bruce Wayne has amnesia. He went through some catastrophic event, which we know is the cave-in of the Batcave with his fight with the Joker. Mm-hmm. And he either took on some sort of head trauma, or the just the event itself traumatized him to such an event that he's suffering from amnesia, and he remembers nothing of his life as Bruce Wayne, therefore he remembers nothing of his life as Batman. So we're seeing him basically stripped down to his most basic self, dealing with the fact that here he is, this rich guy, this giant house, all this money. He doesn't really know how to deal with it. He knows nothing about his former secret identity, and he's moving back in the house. He's going to take back possession of it, being given back to him by the corporation that owns the rights to Batman now, that's running the robotic suit. Just because they figure it's the right thing to do is to give the guy his house back. And as he's taking the house back, a few of the Arkham inmates who are supposed to have been transferred out already have actually stashed away inside, and they're there to attack him and get their revenge on Bruce Wayne, because he's the one who ran Wayne Enterprises, he bankrolled Batman, he had all these ties with things that happened in their personal life, and especially Riddler, who we know from Zero Year stuff, that he and Bruce Wayne knew each other pretty well before Edward Nygma became the Riddler. So I liked the way it drew from those earlier stories, and I liked the idea of seeing the other side of the coin, so to speak, in this issue. There's a couple places where it seemed really weird to me. Right in the middle of the book, there's a two-page spread, but it doesn't look like a two-page spread. They're walking through a tunnel, and they're finding this secret armory that Alfred had, that he stored all of Thomas Wayne's weapons in, apparently.
Right.
And you look at the page, I was reading through it, and it looks like it's two separate pages. So I'm reading page one. Here, actually, let me turn off the screen here. All right, so you've got this two-page spread, and this is actually supposed to be two joined pages as one big piece of art, but I mean, it really looks like you've got page one and page two. And what you don't realize is you're supposed to be reading across, across the page. But these two panels end right on the crease. The only thing that overlays is there's this black area next to the tunnel, and there's like maybe one or two lines, if you look real close from the tunnel, that are on this part of the page. But otherwise, it looks like two separate pages. So I'm reading here, and I'm reading here. This doesn't really make sense. Reading down here, this doesn't mean anything at all.
Right.
And then you read up here, like, well, that kind of ties in. Then suddenly it strikes me that this is the worst layout for a two-page spread I have ever seen.
Right. You know what's funny about that, Dirt? It's not the first time that particular phenomenon has happened to me. Just over the last couple of weeks, if I could remember which books that happened to me in, I'd be happy to show you and kind of figure out why these editors are getting paid any money at all. You probably know that the digital copies that we have do have this as a one-page spread.
Right, because they automatically join the two pages together. They leave it as that, yeah.
So that's why I wasn't completely sure what you were referring to. Now that I see it, it makes more sense. I think that, I was very... I guess what I was uncomfortable with, and it's just, I guess, a part of the story, how out of it Bruce Wayne is, I guess they're not at the point yet where they may never reach this point where they're giving him any sort of inkling as to what he may have been, and he's basically, and Alfred does do his best to try to maintain that pseudo innocence that I think he's trying to preserve in this new version of Bruce Wayne. So it read very awkward to me.
I just wonder if this is leading into some sort of, he's going to have nightmares of bats, and he's going to, be haunted by seeing images of the laughing face of Joker, as he's walking through the manor. And it'll either slowly dawn on him, or he'll start to redevelop as being the Batman, maybe in a slightly different way.
In his, regular life as Bruce Wayne, he'll be put in like a stressful situation, and he'll just react instinctively and be like, and then it'll start coming.
It'll be like
him.
The beginning of Bourne Identity.
Oh,
he's sitting on the park bench.
You took the words right out of my mouth. You absolutely took the words right out of my mouth. This is the Batman Identity.
It is. Well, and the thing is, I will say I enjoyed this. The criticisms I have are rather trivial. I did enjoy this a lot more than I disliked any of it. It's definitely a much better book to read than S.H.I.E.L.D. or Superman this week.
I thought the story was well told. I give Tinian a lot of credit. The story itself definitely was well told.
And I, the other thing is, I read Grayson this week, and Grayson references bearded Bruce Wayne sitting in Wayne Manor being waited on by Alfred, so that obviously takes place after this Batman annual, even though they came out in the same week. It's not a big deal or anything, mm-hmm. but I just thought it was interesting that they actually did that. But I like, I mean, I still like Bruce Wayne. Even if he's not Batman, he still shows himself as being a guy who can think on his feet, a guy with quick reflexes. He may question what it means to be, you know, the richest man in all of Gotham, to have this giant mansion. You know, he doesn't really understand that life that he's left behind and how it really how he fits into it. But I still like the character. I like the fact that he grabbed a rifle and took a shot at Riddler and missed completely because he's not familiar with firearms.
No,
you know, I mean that even
well, you know what that was a swerve. Go back and read it.
A swerve. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah.
That was a misdirect.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a misdirect. So, but I agree with you, Dirt. I thought the story was well told. It's just that I wasn't comfortable with how with the direction they're going with in terms of Bruce Wayne and his possible re-emergence as Batman down the line.
The only thing that I particularly didn't care for is that redhead who's with him, Julie,
mm-hmm.
that suddenly they're making these overtures that the garden is a good place to have a wedding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, okay, let's assume for a minute that she is the best thing in his life. She's the only person he has close in his life right now. He's a man, she's a woman,
Alfred,
sure.
Right.
But they've known each other for, what, 4 months? You know, and suddenly they're talking about, you know, hey, well, we could have a wedding over here. It's like, really? Because at no point before this are they hanging on each other? Are they kissing each other? Are they, you know, acting romantic? It's just like, I don't have any friends. You're my friend. We're spending time together. And they're throwing all this stuff in there, which just seems silly.
Yeah, but that's a trope from amnesiac stories. You know what I mean?
I guess. She'll turn out to secretly be working for the Joker, trying to get close to him.
It's Joker's daughter.
Oh, no.
Oh,
She's in disguise just like he was.
But anyway, still, it was better than some of the other stuff I read this week, so I still enjoyed it.
All right.
You want to, I guess, did you already talk about the Nightwing annual? In that?
You mean Grayson?
Yeah, Grayson, I'm sorry. Yes.
Come on, man, get your book.
I read Grayson from last week. That's my shout out to the back issue segment.
That's another book on my pull list, which I guess I can go ahead and do my pull list right now. Physical
is that,
pull list.
Is that what we're calling this? Oh, I was about to say, I was like, we didn't call that back issue segment the pull list. That makes no sense. That makes no sense.
So after recording last week's show, I think, was it me and you, Agent 70, talking about pull lists?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. And I was like, I'm going to go to my store and actually come up with a list and get my physical pull list down, because usually I just read everything digitally because I don't like...
That's how we get it.
It's easier.
Yeah, and the whole storage thing, which goes against now me getting a pull list, but I came up with a list. I was like, I'll do 4 DC and 4 Marvel. Try to keep it to that for now. I'm sure there'll be some additions and maybe some subtractions. So DC, I've got We Are Robin, Cyborg, Action Comics, and Grayson.
Okay.
And it was funny because I went to the store last week. I tried to pick up Grayson, I guess it was 12, that we all loved last week, mm-hmm. and they were sold out. But since I added it to my pull list, he said he'd check online and see if he could still order it, and he could. So he's going to give me an issue 12.
Nice.
And for Marvel was everything, of course, from the all-new, all-different Marvel. Black Panther, Spider-Man, the Miles Morales book, The Mighty Thor, and Extraordinary X-Men.
Hmm.
I'm sure that Marvel list may grow.
Sure, none of the Avengers books are there.
Yeah, I can read all that. I can read all that digitally. I'm not so worried about that. But, like, yeah, it was hard because, like, I want to throw Ms. Marvel on there and Spider-Gwen, Totally Awesome Hulk. So, yeah. So that's my quick pull list story.
All right. So now you're pulling Grayson, and you wanted to talk about this annual. So just very quickly, I've read Grayson number 12 from last week, and you know I enjoyed it. It was good. I like that they're reestablishing a status quo at the end of the 12th issue. So you know, kind of launching a new arc, you know, overarching arc for the book. So how does this annual play out?
That's a question for Dirt, because I haven't read.
Oh, am I the only one who read this?
Okay. Yeah. My bad. I thought you brought it up because you read it.
I went back. I know if he read it.
Oh, I gotcha.
I went back and read 12 because of your praise for it last week. So when I saw this one, I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah.
I liked the Bat team coming back together and being a part of this. So I, since I read 12 last week, I figured, you know, again, because this was a slow week, I'd go ahead and read the annual because there's paltry pickings this week. And if you read, you know, issue 12, Superman appears in the very last page, or they, I guess, spoil that he's going to be there in the next issue, whatever. And so in this issue, Grayson's getting ready to leave Gotham, and Superman makes an appearance. He sees Grayson jumping off a building because, of course, he's an acrobat, trapeze artist. He can make it, but Superman actually mistakes him for a jumper trying to commit suicide. So you have that fun little interplay between them. And this is really written as a fun book. It looks back as Grayson, when he was Robin with Batman, the first time they meet Superman in the New 52, or the first time that Robin runs into him, I guess I should say, it plays it for showing how Dick Grayson was as a different Robin from the other characters, how he was much more lighthearted. You know, he was, he liked doing the stunts, you know, so to speak. He and Superman have a much friendlier relationship than Superman and Batman. You know, Superman and Batman, they respect each other, they tolerate each other, they can confide in each other if there's this, you know, world-shaking event, but they're not two guys that are going to hang out and, you know, watch football together or something like that. Whereas you get the feeling that Dick and Clark really could. They really do, you know, they're good friends. They make funny quips with each other. He says something about, well, thanks for catching me in midair, but, you know, this really is emasculating to be cradled in your arms, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of stuff, which is just good reading. It's a good, fun story. The villain that they fight is Blockbuster, who is one of those characters that just gets tossed around a lot in Bat books. He's never a character that really amounts to a whole lot, but he's brought up every so often, and
he can absorb a lot of damage.
Yeah,
you know, and so take a punch.
He was a guy that Batman and Robin were wearing down in the hopes that Superman could eventually swoop in and take him out. Now, years later, Grayson is like, "Well, hey, Superman, you're here. You can take him out." And Superman's like, "I'm not the guy I used to be. My powers are not what they once were." Mm-hmm. He even makes the comment that he can't fly. He's got to just do the big leaps. He's basically depowered. This issue sets it up where you can really tell that he is depowered back to basically where he was in his first few Golden Age appearances. He's got the logo with that black mm-hmm. in the diamond that harkens back to some of those early appearances where they
right,
weren't sure
yellow, how wrong exactly with the yellow outline.
Yeah, they weren't sure how everything was supposed to be laid out and work. He doesn't fly, he jumps. He can hear very well, but he doesn't have X-ray vision. He can stop a bullet, but he can still be cut. You know, he can still bleed. I think this issue helps to define the Superman character where he is now in the DC universe much better than the Superman
books
that we read this week. And the fact that he and Grayson have this, you know, fun friendship with each other is, you know, really refreshing to read. And they added now in this version of the DC Universe, if you remember back, the name Nightwing actually came from an old
Superman. Yes.
Yeah. Superman is, I guess, reminiscing about old heroes on Krypton in the old, you know, in the Bronze Age, whenever that book was, or the Silver Age, when that story came out, about how there was Nightwing and Flamebird were these two characters on Krypton who were superheroes. And then in the Silver Age story, Superman and Jimmy get thrust into this alien planet. So they become Nightwing and Flamebird for these aliens on this other planet and, you know, whatever. That's where the name Nightwing came from. They already had the trademark for it, so they just used it for Dick Grayson. It seemed to make sense. They could rebrand him and use that name. Well, in this issue, it actually has Dick saying, you know, I remembered the stories that you told me as Robin about Nightwing and Flamebird, and that's why I chose the name Nightwing when I first stepped out from under the shadow of Batman. So this is the first time they've drawn a direct connection that I can think of that I've ever remembered between the old Superman stories and him using the name. You know, well, other than just DC Editorial had a copyright on a name and they didn't want it to lapse, so that's how Dick Grayson got the name Nightwing.
Well, no, I mean, this is, I was about to say, this is just an ad. That particular aspect was, if you look at the new Teen Titans issue where Nightwing makes his first appearance, you know, in the disco costume that George Perez designed, right? There is
the yellow leaves or the yellow feathers on it.
Yeah, no, with the blue and the gold, you know. Mm-hmm. If you read that issue, he talks specifically about where he gets the name from. It's the same basis.
Oh, okay. So, well, then they reestablished it here.
Yes.
In the not so new 52, whatever this
exactly this
new post-convergence continuity is.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, I'm looking forward to reading this. I'm flipping through this now. I'm glad that that Grayson, I guess, is kind of reinvigorated. The art on this is nice. Alvaro Martinez. Mm. This looks good. You know, I like the way this is done.
It's a good, fun issue. It was one of those, because the week was overall pretty flat, this stood out as one of those that I could have picked as Click of the Week. If another book hadn't come out this week, this probably would have been the one I would have picked.
Interesting.
Because this was just a lot of fun. It was a good read. It was a well-told story. It was fun to read. The artwork was nice. You know, I love the throwbacks to the old days and getting some of that DC history that's been lost with the new 52, how they're filling in some of those holes in the history in the past. So just overall, it was a good book. It's definitely worth checking out.
Cool. I'm definitely going to pick
I'm assuming with Grayson being on my pull list, I'm assuming I'll get the annual too. So.
Can't assume. Because specifically,
I'm looking at that $4.99 price tag. I'm like, hopefully
I'll get
that or not.
I was going to say, Tim, in terms of the pull list, unless you specify that you're getting everything, I don't think they always pull an annual for you.
We do it at our store.
Right.
We'll pull every annual. What we won't necessarily pull is if there's a tie-in miniseries. Like if someone, there are some people that get, like, say, Deadpool, but they don't want every Deadpool versus the Marvel Universe and Deadpool.
Thanos.
Yeah. They don't necessarily want all of that.
I don't blame them too.
Yeah. But yeah, usually an annual will make sure the
customer. Just you should probably just double check. That's all.
Yeah. I mean, if they do, it's fine. It's not that big of a deal, but
you'll be happy you have it though. It's really good.
Yeah, I'll read the digital at some point this weekend probably anyway. So cool.
And I also quickly to throw it out there, I did read the new Suicide Squad annual number one. Okay. I did go back and read the past, was it 4 or 5 issues, whatever, since Convergence that sets up for this finale, and the story is basically League of Assassins splits and the new younger, more evil version of the League of Assassins is basically ISIS, except for superheroes.
Okay.
They are super criminals. They are collecting every super weapon, every nerve toxin, every scarecrow gas and Joker gas and everything they can get and stockpiling these weapons, and they're taking over territory in the Middle East, and they're going to wipe out, you know, large sections of humanity because they're the League of Assassins. That's what they do. So the Suicide Squad is there to try to stop them. One of the members of Suicide Squad does not make it through this issue, but there's kind of like a asterisk at the end because everyone thinks they're dead, but the weapon that he's killed with is a weapon designed to do something other than just blow people up. So he's not dead, but it may be a while before anyone ever sees him again. And I'll just leave it at that without giving all that away. But what I can say is the story is actually, it plays out. You can't just read this annual by itself. It's not going to make any sense. You have to be reading Suicide Squad to be able to follow. Unlike Grayson, which stood alone as a, you know, one and done, you don't have to read anything else to understand what's happening there. This is, they're using the annual as the finale. Like, this is the grand finale. This is where everything blows up and people get shot and everything falls apart and they have to make their big escape. You know, that is what this annual is for. And to that end, it does a really good job. It does a good job of wrapping up the story, of giving the characters the arc of their individual, you know, progression through this storyline. I'm trying to avoid saying certain things because I don't want to give away. If someone wants to read this, I don't want to give away which character doesn't, you know, make it all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
But there are fun story beats where Like Captain Boomerang can never remember Parasite. Like there's several times where people say, "Oh, and what about Parasite? He disappeared. We got to go find him." And he's like, "Who? What guy?" Mm. Like he just doesn't. You know, he has no idea who this guy is. He's never worked with him before. He doesn't care. Black Manta has picked sides that he actually believes in what these assassins are fighting for, and he's starting to fight on their side. He's going undercover to infiltrate the group, but the deeper he goes in, the more he likes them, and the more he thinks that they have the right idea, because Black Manta was always one of those that hated, you know, life on the surface and humanity and whatever. So that plays out really well. There's just a lot of good character stuff with even Harley Quinn, who's a character I don't particularly care for, but they did a good job of giving her a storyline within this storyline that plays out well. So,
sure.
You know, it's not going to be my click of the week or anything like that, but it was definitely a good read. It was definitely a good finale for the storyline that they've done. Like I said, you can't just sit down and read this by itself, but if you've been reading New Suicide Squad and you're looking at this going, man, this is an extra dollar, it's a $4.99, is it really worth it? If you've been reading the story, yes, it is worth it, because this plays out big. It uses the extra pages, the extra ability to put a lot more into the story.
Right, to put a good capper to the story. I got you. Yeah. I mean, this is a trend that we've seen in annuals for as long as I can remember, where they sort of where the two big companies kind of vacillate between, you know, telling good one-off stories and maybe making it like a mini anthology. You know, in terms of what the annual consists of. And making it the capper to either an 11-issue story or a much longer long-form story, and having the annual kind of wrap up that story. So,
or the kickoff.
Exactly. Wanted to shout out at MantWang97, tweeted at us. You know, he sometimes loves getting an annual, but it's so hit and miss right now. Hashtag pay off your pull. Now there's a hashtag that seems to have continued life from last week.
Yeah.
And we may have a pull list segment, you know, that recurs every once in a while on the show, since Tim has kind of kicked off what's on his pull list.
I really have to sit down and think about it, because I read so much stuff, especially through the store. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some stuff that I definitely want to keep copies of, and a lot of stuff I read that I don't keep copies of, and it's hard sometimes remembering, like, do I have that or not? Because sometimes it feels like every book that comes out is my book, because I'm able to sit down and read it in if I want to.
Right, so it's hard to remember. And, you know, obviously we're definitely very, very fortunate to be able to read so many books because of what we do. But I definitely have my Comixology pull list, and I keep, you know, I try to maintain it, but there's way too many things on it right now.
We get a lot of books, you know, digitally, besides, you know, everybody wants to know about Marvel and DC, and of course that's the most of what we read, but IDW, Image, sure. Boom, Valiant, Titan... you know, all these companies are more than happy to send us digital copies of the books that we...
Exactly.
And a lot of times I do, you know, sit down and read a good swath of them, but just because of the time crunch, I don't always get them, you know, by Thursday night.
Yeah. Not to mention Fantagraphics. You know, they're putting out a Hip Hop Family Tree, you know, in single issue format. And what I love about... I've read this already, but what I love about these reissued Hip Hop Family Tree books is that there's bonus material. You know, you're asking me about bonus material in Captain America White. There's definitely bonus material in these issues, single issues of Hip Hop Family Tree. So if you're looking to pick up something cool and kind of quirky, give this a shot.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else I want to get to before I get to the Click of the Week book.
Probably not.
Well, let me do real quick, kind of rapid fire, the Secret Wars books that came out this week that I don't want to give much time to, because, again, they're examples of Secret Wars books that really don't give you much in terms of, you know, consequences down the line or ramifications or long-lasting effects. There are probably hints of things we may see. The books that I read this week... The Ghost Racers. Let's see, what else did I read? I skimmed the Inferno book, and I skimmed the Hail Hydra book. I can't speak too much to those, but again, I don't think we're getting too much in the way of long-lasting effects. If you're interested in these characters, give it a read. But ultimately, these are probably the lower tier Secret Wars priority reads. You know, a much lower priority.
Yeah, because I think Inferno is the only one I have plans to read from this week. I think I have to double check.
I can tell you from people coming through the store that the least liked cover this week is this E for Extinction.
Mm-hmm.
Who is that supposed to be?
That's supposed to be Cassandra Nova, I think. Remember her? Yeah.
She's
from the Grant Morrison.
The sister of Xavier, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, well, this cover did not go over well, I can tell you that.
And Matt Wing says he can't wait to read Suicide Squad. He does miss summer annual crossovers.
Hashtag Evolutionary War. Oh, my God, I remember that.
But see, I always hated when they would do, like, they were all Elseworlds stories, or they were all just something that didn't mean anything to the ongoing book, you know? I can understand when they would do ones where you would, like, Atlantis Attacks, where you would read from one annual to another to another to another just to see how it affected everybody. Or
well, that's a mini-event.
Right.
The thing.
And those were fun. Those were fun. But when they would do just like a one-off imaginary story, or they would do like Armageddon 2001, and so every annual was set in the year 2001, and this was done like in 93, 94 or whatever.
That.
And it was like none of the stories mattered. They were all same thing they did with what was the DC one from 2 years ago where they had all the 3D covers? Future's End.
Oh, yeah.
You know, those Futures End annuals. And as it turns out, only, like, two of them had anything to do with the actual Futures End storyline, and all the rest were just these random character in the future stories that meant nothing.
You know, there's retailers, and you may be one, your store may be one of them, that still have stacks of some of those covers.
Definitely.
3D covers. Jeez.
Oh, yeah, there's some of them we still have, maybe 10 or 12 copies.
Oh, my gosh.
Stacks. I thought I was at 2nd and Charles, I think actually over the weekend, and in the discount bin were a couple of, I think it was the Villains Month. Villains Month and Futures End, because they both had 3D covers, right?
Yeah, the Villains Month, that was the first one, and that was the low print run, and everybody was freaking out when they came out.
Yeah, I think these actually were the Futures Ends.
Yeah.
They had covers, like $2 or whatever.
Yeah,
so fun.
Yeah, we still have tons of those, too, in our store.
All right. Any more rapid fire? Because I think I know what book you're all leading up to.
Actually, we just get the click of the week. The issue, the book I gave 5 stars on. The
Can we get a drum roll? Drum roll.
Fine. Because I
Justice League 44.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Fine. It was good. I don't know. I'm having trouble seeing how much you guys, I see how people can like it, but,
it's,
you know, well, you guys go talk about it because I don't want to.
It's an actual fun event that's, at least right now, just contained to the Justice League books, besides whenever that 1 month where they release a little one shots, which I actually don't even mind because they have some good artists and stuff going to be working on it. But it, like, from Jason Fabok's art to the writing and the portrayal of how this is, to me, it seems like this is just like a Wonder Woman event. Mm-hmm. It's just, it feels like a cinematic movie to me.
Well, the Anti-Monitor in the old, you know, the original Crisis was a character that just kind of came out of nowhere. He's from the antimatter universe. He wants to destroy everything. And you never really, he was a threat, but you never really understood why or anything. And this story is making him much more of an actual character. It plays a lot with Darkseid, and I love stories with Darkseid and Apocalypse and the New Gods, all of Jack Kirby, Fourth World stuff. The way they tie it all together is really fun. The way that they've turned Batman into Mobius with the chair, I love. The way that Superman is now made evil by the Apocalypse stuff. The Black Racer, I remember the Black Racer from reading all the Superman stuff in the mid-90s.
They kind of made the Black Racer look a little bit different. They've definitely revamped his look.
Yeah, he's not a guy just on skis. Because he was, Jack Kirby made him as the anti-Silver Surfer.
Right.
Silver Surfer was this silver guy on a surfboard in space, so he made Black Racer as a guy in black armor on skis. And so they did revamp him now, so he's a little different. But he's still the same guy. But I like what they did with the character and how the character affected another character in this issue, which, not to give away spoilers. And I like the reveal towards the end of the book of what the Anti-Monitor has.
Mm-hmm.
That Darkseid.
You didn't know that was coming, though?
Once, well,
I kept reading this, and once I got to that point, I was like, I know exactly what's going to happen the next couple of pages. I think that's what kind of was that detracted from my enjoyment of the book.
And see, for me, it was the opposite, because Darkseid is one of those characters that I knew from the Superpowers cartoons when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I had the action figure because he was the villain everybody would beat up. Darkseid was the big character in Legion of Superheroes. They did the big crossover with him in the future when I was growing up. I remember reading that. So Darkseid is a villain I've always loved. And the whole tie-in with what Anti-Monitor has that Darkseid wants is one of those things where I could see it coming and I could feel it coming. And for me, it was more of a, this is what they're building to. That's awesome, because that's something that I've always read about. You know, it's always been part of the story.
Right.
To me, this is playing out to me the same way that Hickman's Avengers and New Avengers stuff were playing out leading up to Secret Wars. I mean,
where
this
it
is obviously
tied a lot of things together.
Right. He's taking all these little threads and bringing them together, and he's got the biggest of the heavy hitters. You've got some of the best looking artwork. Mm-hmm. You've got some brilliant coloring, great dialogue. I mean, this is just one of those books where if I had, you know, that checklist, and you're going down, is this, yep, good artwork. Yep, good coloring. Yep, good story. Yep, good characterization. Yep, good plot. You know,
suspense.
Just everything about it is so much fun.
I was going to say, Fabok is putting in some work on this, man. There's a lot of detail in some of these pages.
Yes.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug. What can
Seriously.
I say?
Seriously. Putting in a lot of work. And that page, that last page, the two-page spread where the thing that I was kind of disappointed in and Dirt was alluding to, right? Like the reveal.
Yeah.
That's beautifully done. That's going to sell for a lot of money. Hmm. The original art.
Yeah.
So I like for a little small panel that made me chuckle was Lex Luthor and Superman on Apocalypse, and Superman's all charged up with solar pit energy from Apocalypse.
Yeah, like corrupted solar energy.
And he like just brushes some dirt off his shoulders, like. Thought that was it was very small, probably not even noticeable, but it got a chuckle out of me.
And I really like the way they have Superman drawn, where he is. They're drawing him normal, and then they're making him the negative. And so he's drawing him because you can tell by the way he's drawing, like, the shadows. He's drawing the shadows in black, and then they're doing the negative and making it into white. And so it just really stands out. Like, if you were watching the Superman movies, the Saul Kind movies that came out in the early 80s, the Christopher Reeve stuff, and they were going to do an evil, negative Apocalypse version of Superman, that's the effect that they would do, is they would have him. And then they would just do the negative image of him. And even though it looks kind of hokey and it looks kind of silly when you're watching it on a movie, when it's, you know, that's the best special effects they can do in the early 80s, you know, late 70s, whatever. Mm-hmm. Looking at it here in the comic book page is just really cool. Like, that's an effect that you don't see used in comics. And it just, to me, it just comes across as like, that's a really cool idea. And just to play him off that way, instead of it being something where, you know, he would come out and the colors would be reversed. You know, he would be wearing a red tunic with a blue cape, you know, is the type of thing you would expect in the past, how they would do the evil version of him. Or he would be the mirror image, the S would be backwards on his chest, you know, doing that type of thing. Instead, they're doing the negative color, and it really just looks cool to me. I just really like that.
So, yeah, we loved it. Is it your click of the week also?
Yeah, it's
Agent 70?
No, it's jerk. I think... I'm sorry to be the dissenting opinion. I respectfully dissent from the majority opinion. I kind of shifted back into work mode just now. I like this. You know, for all the reasons that you guys love this book, I like the book. But as I was reading it, I saw where Geoff Johns was going with this, and I all I could think of was, And I had not necessarily the opposite reaction that Dirt did. You know, Dirt was excited that, you know, that Jones was choosing to tie the Anti-Monitor into the Dark Side mythos, because this particular aspect of the Dark Side mythos and you know, what his goal, his stated goal was for many Dark Side appearances in the DC universe. From pre-crisis, post-crisis, up to the New 52, this particular aspect was always kind of central to Darkseid's story. And tying the Anti-Monitor into that, well, you know, I'm not as familiar with Crisis. I don't know if this is already kind of pre-established. Dirt, I don't know if you're sure on that one either. You know?
Of Anti-Monitor having that?
Yeah.
No.
Right. So you're not 100% sure. This may be a pre-existing concept.
No. I mean, I guess I shouldn't say I'm 100% sure, but I'm
right.
90% sure that that is something that's new for this.
That's new. That's a new connection. That's right. My point. It's a new connection that's been made. So, but I could see it coming, and as I kept reading it, there was, you know, foreshadowing and whatnot that let me know that they insinuated that this was about to be revealed, and all I could think of was, oh man, you know, we're supposed to care about this Anti-Monitor. That's the one note that I typed into the sheet this week was, I wish I cared about the Anti-Monitor. I don't. Like, who is this, you know, loser? You know, like, we were speaking before about Deus Ex Machina's. That's what he was back in Crisis. Like, he just sort of appeared out of nowhere and, you know, acted, you know, like this big thing that was the big bad, you know?
Well, and part of it also is in, what was the other Crisis? Infinite Crisis?
Yeah, Crisis on Infinite Earths was the first one. And then
Crisis on Infinite Earths. And then they did Infinite Crisis, you know, I mean, gosh, was that like a decade ago already?
Close, with Superboy punching.
Yeah, and Superboy actually got the Anti-Monitor's armor and made it part of his suit.
Right.
So he was stealing the powers or, you know, whatever. And so Anti-Monitor is a character who has had more appearances than just in Crisis on Infinite Earths. He's,
right,
you know, done some other things. But, I mean, for me, and I think they made allusions to him in Multiversity from Grant Morrison, even though that was almost impossible to read.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, you know, I just like when Geoff Johns pulls all these different threads and starts weaving them together. And again, this being Justice League, DC editorial allowing Justice League to kind of sit on the fringe of continuity, where, like, this story definitely counts, and it's part of continuity, and it fits, and it's going to have repercussions. You're also looking at the classic Superman, the classic Batman, the classic Wonder Woman. You know, this is not depowered Superman. It's not Robo Batman.
Right.
It's not Goddess of War, Wonder Woman. This is, it's more about they're allowing them to tell the story that they want to tell, even though the DC Universe as a whole is in a different spot right now. They're saying, okay, we're going to just kind of relax the rules and let you tell the story that you want to tell, even though it may not necessarily fit in the publishing line right now. I like the fact that they're giving them that freedom to just go nuts and do what they want to do.
All right. Well, it sounds like you guys got your clicks of the week out of the way. I'm going to throw mine out there. Surprise, surprise, surprise. It's S.H.I.E.L.D. number 10, the Howard the Duck issue. I enjoyed this that much.
Good choice.
I enjoyed this that much. It was just a fun read. Like I said, it definitely read much more like a Howard the Duck issue that guest starred, you know, members of S.H.I.E.L.D., but it just read, I had a great time reading it from front to back. So that's why it's my click of the week. There were a couple of strong candidates. Justice League number 44 was a great candidate. Captain America White number 2 was a great candidate. But each of them kind of had a bump or two in the story that pushed my overall experience down a notch for each of them. So that's why I'm going with S.H.I.E.L.D. number 10.
Alrighty.
Did Roddy give one?
I don't believe so.
He read like half a book this week.
No. Roddy Cat, we're looking forward to you rejoining us when your schedule allows.
His favorite was a Lady Death Apocalypse Century Edition Heavenly Variant cover, limited to 100.
Nice.
So that about does it for tonight's Comic Book Chronicles. I want to thank everyone for tuning in live, a.k.a. Matt Wang 97.
Yeah.
and anyone else out there. Or if you just tuned into the audio replay podcast or the video podcast at your leisure. Follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDLGG98 and at CBCron. PCN Dirt is at PCN underscore Dirt.
Yay, that's me.
And PopCultureNetwork.com. Agent 70 is at Agent underscore 70. And Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. Is Matt going to be at New York Comic Con too?
Yes.
So
yes.
Make sure to holla at Matt Wang 97 and also Agent 70.
We'll be at New York Comic Con, but next Thursday, I'm going to do my very best to make it to the show. I don't know if I'll be coming from New York Comic Con or still preparing for the Friday and the rest of the weekend. So that's still up in the air. My itinerary for New York Comic Con, at least the early part, is not set in stone yet. So we'll see. But I'm looking forward to reporting on the things that I see. Looking forward to seeing a lot of the character, a lot of the creators that we've come into contact with and have become friends of the show. So it'll be a good time. Hopefully have lots of pictures and stories to tell.
So yeah, it may just be myself and PCN Dirt to begin with, but we shall see.
Hopefully Roddy can show up.
Well, I might be winging it solo. We'll see.
Hey, it'd be funny if I could do a live spot from. Well, actually, no, the con floor closes by the time we go on, so the hope is I can get home in time.
All right, so next Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, we'll be back. We are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Base!